All right, so get this. We're diving into the fall of Jerusalem, like straight into the Babylonian siege, you know, the one.
Oh, yeah, that's a story that always packs a punch.
Right, but hold on. We're going deeper than just, you know, names, dates, and conquests. Yeah. This is about those behind-the-scenes power plays, the ripple effects of exile, mm-hmm. and those theological debates about loyalty and divine covenants.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going there.
What I find fascinating is how the Babylonian Empire was so strategic. I mean, they're brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. But it was more than that. They were playing the long game, you know, and their dismantling of Judah. It's like a masterclass in control, not just land, but people and ideas, too.
Okay, so let's back up a second, set the scene. We've got Judah right under the thumb of the Babylonian war machine, and leading the charge is King Jehoiakim. He wasn't exactly Mr. Patience, was he?
Not really. He saw Babylon stumble a bit against Egypt and thought, boom, this is my chance to break free, ditch the tribute, and call the shots.
But here's the thing. Egypt might have won that round, but they were basically tapped out, couldn't press their advantage. Babylon, though.
Mm.
Oh, they were just getting warmed up. So this rebellion of his was a major backfire, right?
Right.
What happened when Jehoiakim poked the Babylonian bear?
Picture this, a massive pileup of ancient armies, Babylonian, Aramean, Moabite, even Ammonite forces all crashing down on Judah. It's total chaos, and it shows you what happens when a kingdom loses its footing. Everyone wants a peace.
And in the middle of all this, we've got Daniel and his crew. They get hauled off to Babylon as hostages, right? It's like Nebuchadnezzar wanted some insurance on Jehoiakim's good behavior, though I'm guessing Jehoiakim didn't get the memo.
Yeah, that was classic Babylonian strategy. They weren't just about conquering. It was about controlling the future, too. Holding potential leaders hostage. Smart move. But it makes you wonder why spare Daniel and his friends. What made them assets or maybe less of a threat to Babylon?
So what happened to Jehoiakim in the end? Did he wiggle out of this mess?
Sadly, no. He died in the thick of it all, leaving his son Jehoiachin to inherit a kingdom on the verge of collapse. And Jehoiachin, he took a different route. He saw the writing on the wall, maybe literally, and chose surrender to prevent more bloodshed.
Practical, but not exactly heroic, is it? So Babylon takes the surrender. But that doesn't mean party time, right? What did they do next?
This is where you see their genius for long-term control. They didn't just want cities. They wanted to dismantle the whole society. They exiled the skilled workers, artisans, thinkers, the leaders, anyone who could pose a future threat or help Judah bounce back who stayed behind. The poor and the unskilled, those without the means to resist or organize.
So basically cripple their ability to fight back, but keep a population to squeeze taxes and tribute from.
Exactly. And it's a tactic that echoes through history. Look at the Romans, the British Empire, controlling a population by removing its brains and its cultural heart. It's a tragic pattern.
And then into this power vacuum steps, Zedekiah, another son of Josiah, basically handpicked by Nebuchadnezzar to be the puppet king. You'd think this would be a chance for a fresh start, a chance to learn from the past. But things didn't go as planned, did they?
Nope. Not at all. Even with warnings from the prophet Ezekiel already exiled in Babylon and Jeremiah back in Jerusalem, Zedekiah decides to rebel. And this decision, more than any other, puts the spotlight on the idea of covenants.
Okay, so covenants, it wasn't just signing a treaty, right? For the ancient Israelites, this was something way deeper.
Absolutely. It wasn't just a political agreement. It was a sacred promise, a bond sworn before God himself. Breaking a covenant wasn't just bad diplomacy. It was a spiritual betrayal, messing with the divine order. And the consequences, well, let's just say they could be devastating.
So Zedekiah breaks his oath to Nebuchadnezzar, basically breaking a covenant.
Yeah.
What happens next? Does he manage to pull off this rebellion and get Judah back on its feet?
Well, about that, Zedekiah's rebellion didn't exactly go down in history as a shining victory. In fact, when the Babylonians tightened their grip on Jerusalem, things get pretty messy for our rebellious king.
I'm all ears. Yeah. Tell me, what did Zedekiah do?
Picture this under the cover of night. Zedekiah makes a run for it. He sneaks out a gate near the king's garden, hoping to vanish into the night with his army.
That sounds more like a desperate escape than a heroic last stand. What does that tell us about Zedekiah as a leader? Was he completely out of touch with reality?
It's a good question. It definitely suggests he wasn't seeing things clearly, maybe even clinging to the hope that he could somehow dodge the consequences.
And didn't his army ditch him during this escape? That's got to sting even for a king who's already lost everything.
Oh, yeah. That's the ultimate betrayal. It shatters any illusion of authority, any shred of respect or loyalty. He's lost the trust of his people, the support of his army, and ultimately, like the prophets warned him, the favor of God.
So Zedekiah, our runaway king, ends up right back in Nebuchadnezzar's clutches. I'm guessing there's no royal pardon in his future.
No, Nebuchadnezzar wasn't exactly known for being merciful. What happens to Zedekiah goes way beyond a simple punishment. It's like this carefully orchestrated spectacle, a warning to anyone else thinking about rebelling.
The sources don't shy away from the gory details, do they?
Nope. They describe Zedekiah being forced to watch his own sons executed right there in front of him. Can you imagine the horror of that? It's a scene of just pure cruelty designed to break him completely. And as if that wasn't enough, they blind him, put him in chains, and ship him off to Babylon to live out his days in darkness and captivity.
A brutal end. So different from what happened to Jehoiachin, even though they both ended up surrendering to Babylon?
That's the key difference. Jehoiachin, he surrendered to stop the bloodshed, so he was exiled but spared the worst, Zedekiah, though he rebelled after swearing an oath, and that's a whole other level. Nebuchadnezzar, he wanted to send a message. His whole empire was built on the idea of loyalty and keeping your word. Zedekiah's rebellion wasn't just a military threat. It was like a slap in the face to the very foundation of Babylonian power.
So this wasn't just about crushing a rebellion. It was about making an example out of Zedekiah.
Exactly. By making his punishment so public and so brutal, Nebuchadnezzar was sending a message to everyone under his rule. This is what happens when you betray Babylon.
It really makes you think about the power of oaths and covenants back then. It wasn't just about signing a piece of paper. It was about something much deeper, almost sacred.
Right. The consequences of breaking those oaths, they're way more serious than we can probably even imagine today. It wasn't just about legal stuff. It could mean losing your honor, your place in society, even the favor of the gods.
So we've seen Jehoiakim's reckless gamble backfire, ending in chaos and his own death. We've seen Jehoiachin choose to surrender to save his people, which led to exile. And now we've seen Zedekiah's rebellion, his desperate attempt to escape, and his truly awful punishment. His story full of twists and turns, but it also shows us so much about power and loyalty and the huge impact of broken trust.
And as we look closer at what happened after Jerusalem fell, remember, this isn't just ancient history. These stories, these choices and consequences, they connect to our own lives in ways we might not expect. They make us think about the promises we make, the commitments we keep, and how our choices affect us and everyone around us.
You're right. It's easy to get caught up in the drama of it all. But what's really interesting is how it all connects to those big questions about leadership and loyalty and the weight of our decisions. Speaking of choices, there's something about Zedekiah that I find really fascinating.
Oh, really? What is it?
It's that part where things in Jerusalem are just falling apart. Famine's hitting hard. People are starving in the streets. It's just, I can't even imagine the desperation and the fear.
It's pretty bleak. The sources really don't hold back. They talk about people eating whatever scraps they could find, even cases of cannibalism. It's like society just completely unraveled.
And it's right in the middle of all this that Zedekiah decides to make his escape. Could have stayed, you know, faced the consequences with everyone else.
Yeah.
But he chose to run.
Yeah. That's a decision people still debate. What was he thinking? Was it just pure cowardice trying to save his own skin, or was there something more to it? Maybe some misguided idea that he could help his people better if he stayed free.
But the way he snuck out in the middle of the night, like he didn't want anyone to see him, that doesn't really scream brave leader, does it?
It's definitely not the picture of a king leading the charge, is it? It feels like he was so out of touch with what was really going on. Like he actually thought he could just run away from everything.
And then his own army abandons him during the escape. That's got to be a huge blow, even for a king who's already lost pretty much everything.
It's the ultimate betrayal, right? It rips away any last bit of authority. He had any sense that people still respected him or were loyal to him. He lost the trust of his people, his army. And in the end, like the prophets warned him, the favor of God.
So where does that leave us? We've got a king who took a gamble and lost a king who surrendered and a king who rebelled, only to end up in a truly horrific situation.
Yeah.
It's a story about ambition and desperation and the terrible consequences that come with breaking your word.
And it's a story about leadership and the choices we make when things are really tough and how those choices affect not just us, but everyone around us. We see Jehoiachin's courage when he surrendered the practicality of those who went into exile and then the tragic fall of a leader who just couldn't grasp the weight of his actions.
It really makes you think about those unspoken agreements we make in our own lives, those promises we made to ourselves and others, the things we believe in that connect us to something bigger.
It's a good question to ask ourselves, isn't it? Because just like those kings, we're always making choices that have big consequences. The oaths we take, the promises we keep, the values we try to live by, they all shape not just our own lives, but the lives of everyone around us.
And sometimes those consequences, they ripple out for generations, shaping history in ways we can't even imagine. So as you go about your day, think about those unspoken agreements, those invisible covenants. What choices are you making? What kind of legacy are you building? Because the fall of Jerusalem reminds us that even the mightiest kingdoms can fall. but the values we choose to live by, those can last.